You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Page to Stage,
a conversation with theater makers.
We're your hosts.
That's Brian.
And that's Mary.
Join us as we focus the spotlight back on the theater maker to uncover their process.
We speak with folks in the industry that often aren't heard from,
such as stage managers, producers, crew members, marketing professionals,
and everything in between. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Hi, I'm Dori Berenstein. I'm a Broadway producer and I'm a filmmaker, and I am CEO of the Broadway Podcast Network.
Woo!
Which everyone here who listens to us, they already know. We love how we love BPM. So before we kick off, I just wanted to say that this episode is like the first episode officially of our like mini series that we wanted to launch called Page to Stream. And so with obviously everything that's happened with COVID-19 and then mixed with things that I've been doing in my professional life of streaming events and streaming concerts and such, we wanted to have conversations. I was talking with Brian and just like talk to theater makers who are now streaming events. So obviously that includes Netflix, but it could also include, you know, anything that you're streaming online, whether it's just through YouTube or if it is from like a bigger platform like Netflix or Disney Plus. So we're excited to take this leap, and we're so excited to have Dori, to have you on here as our first guest of this new mini series idea.
I am so honored.
What a way to kick it off. Yeah, we're so excited to talk to you. But specifically, we wanted to talk to you about the process of bringing The Prom from the stage to screen. But can you begin by telling our listeners a little bit about how you first became involved with the theatrical version of the project and how long ago that might have been? Because I know this one was cooking for a while.
Oh my gosh. Yes, these things take a long time. Day one for me on The Prom was pretty much day one of The Prom. And at this point, that was 10 years ago, if you can believe it. 10 years ago, I got a call from Casey Nicola, who director, choreographer. And Casey and I knew each other long ago from working on Thoroughly Modern Millie together. And we had stayed in touch, and we had always talked about doing something together. And he said, "I have an idea." And the idea had come from Jack Fertel, who's a legendary guy in our business, just an amazing theater maker. And it was just a few lines of an idea, but pretty much other than that, a blank page. And Casey had already talked to Bob Martin, Chad Beglin, and Matthew Sklar about it, composer, lyricist, book writer, and they had jumped on board to this idea, and they invited me to dinner, and they pitched the idea of The Prom, and it was literally as simple as this girl from Indiana wants to take her girlfriend to the prom, and the PTA cancels it, and this crazy group from New York, the Broadway divas, swoop down to Indiana to save the day, and they make things far worse. And that was basically the idea. And I'm looking at these people that I just love so much, and I just believe in their talent so much. And I said, yeah, we're doing this. This is happening. And it took 8 years, 8 years to get to Broadway, because these things are hard. Bill Damaschke joined me soon thereafter as my producing partner. And it was just a fascinating roller coaster ride to Broadway, but very, very proud of this story. It's such an important message, and I'm very thrilled it's now coming out as a film.
With so many people that'll have access to it, which is one of the most amazing things about where you guys were able to get this movie placed. So how did the conversation begin to adapt this Broadway musical into a feature film?
Well, you know, I think we all felt all along that this would really translate well to the screen. But just thinking that doesn't mean it's going to happen. And as is often the case, early on in the run of The Prom, we had various people from studios show up and say, "Ooh, you know, this is really exciting. We're really interested in the possible adaptation of this property." And coming from film also, I know that very often that means really had a great time. See ya. You're never going to hear from them again. So we did feel that Ryan Murphy would love this project. We knew he had a deal at Netflix, but he also separately on his own had heard about The Prom, and he had already on his own decided to come see the show. So we had opened in November, and Ryan came to see the show in January, and only Bill and I knew he was there. And we talked to him afterwards, and he said, "I love this, and I want to make this movie, and I know exactly how to do it." And having heard this many times, not just on The Prom, but on many other things throughout the years, it's like, so glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, so you did not believe him at all.
Well, you know, I think if I believed that every time I heard that, I'd be a really depressed person. It's probably better just to be thrilled they had a great time. And if anything comes of it, oh my gosh, how exciting. So it's maybe self-protective. But this was different. This was different. Ryan moved very, very quickly. Very soon, we're in negotiations and figuring out how to make this real. And even when it does happen, and even if when you do make a deal, it could be years before there's actually a green light, years before the movie goes into production. And we were in production that same year in December. So it happened fast.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been talking about turning Wicked into a film for like, it feels like a decade now.
Longer.
How fast Ryan moved, was that surprising to you as a filmmaker? Like, was that, or is that maybe Ryan's, like, a testament to Ryan's personality or work ethic, or maybe just like how passionate he was about this story?
I think it's all the above. And I think it's also his goal, which was aligned very much with ours, is to get this message out there as quickly as possible to change hearts and minds. And, you know, it's an election year. It would have come out during the election year. Originally, that was the hope. Obviously, no one anticipated COVID, putting a little damper on things, to say the least. But even with COVID, it's just extraordinary. It happened so fast. It's amazing.
Can we talk a little bit about your role moving from the theatrical project, if you will, to the film version? You're one of the producers of the film adaptation of The Prom. So can you explain the difference between an executive producer and a producer in the film world?
For The Prom, specifically, there are five producers. Ryan is a producer. Alexis Woodall, who is Ryan's partner, works very closely with him on all of his projects and was very, very involved in the film. Adam Anders, who is the music supervisor, and then Bill and I, as the original producers of the Broadway show, received a producing title. The executive producers are Matt, Chad, and Bob, and Casey Nicola. So it is part of the deal that they negotiated, and the executive producers more are given that title as part of their deal, but they are not necessarily hands-on involved in the producing of the show. It is more of an acknowledgement of their huge contribution to the film, but the actual work of producing is really typically reserved for producer. And then it's actually differentiated further in film these days, and this is a fairly new thing. When you are a producer on a film, there's a differentiation between producer and a producer that has the PGA moniker next to their name. And the PGA is the Producers Guild of America. You have to apply to the PGA to get that marker. And there are a lot of people who are listed as producers who don't get that marker. And then there are producers who get that marker. And that the mark signifies that you actually played a very significant role in the production of the film. You have to go through a whole process to apply for it. And there's a panel that reviews everything very carefully to decide whether or not you should be receiving that credit or not. And so it breaks down further from EP to producer and then producer with a PGA marker on it.
So is that like project to project? Does that like vary from project to project?
Completely, because your role on a film varies, you know, from film to film to film. And so in some instances, you might be more passively involved or might not be engaged in the same extent. I mean, it really is pretty rigorous that, you know, they have a pages of you know, what would help you get to that point where they'd agree to give you that marker. So it's a very, very deliberate, careful differentiation. It's very interesting because I've done a lot of film work in the past, but this is the first time I've gone through that process.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I've heard that from the screenwriter's point of view, where they also have to do something similar, but not for the PGA. I guess it's for the
WGA.
Mm-hmm. WGA. And they have to submit all the pieces that they wrote, and then they compare it next to what was actually used in the film. And then they decide what percentage, you know, of your contributions was actually made. So I thought that was really interesting. So it's interesting to hear it from producers.
Yeah. Well, I think it's so interesting. And it really made me think about relative to our business in theater, because you have 25 people above the title, and some of those people show up at opening night, you know, so, yeah. And you need those people, and they're wonderful, but it'd be interesting if there was the equivalent to differentiate.
So Dory, I wanted to ask about the timeline of from when Ryan came to see The Prom on Broadway to when you guys started pre-production, which I guess I don't know if there were any changes made to the script or what that process looked like, but what how long of a period was that exactly?
Ryan came to see the Broadway show in January. We over the next couple months negotiated, you know, obviously plans started to take shape, because the goal was to get the film into production as quickly as possible. We had various cast come in to see the Broadway show. But all of this was very, very secret and quiet, mainly because Bill and I felt very strongly we didn't want to take anything away from our Broadway show. We wanted full focus on our cast and on the, you know, the talent in our cast and on the show itself. And so we didn't want to anything to take away from that. And, you know, particularly as we were approaching the Tony Awards, we wanted all the focus to be on our show and our cast. But obviously things had to get underway and move forward. The work on the script, it started off for Bob and Chad and Matt, you know, really just starting to talk about how you open this up, how do you adapt a show on from a stage to screen, and to start thinking about what are the opportunities, maybe even that we thought about when we were working on the show that we decided we couldn't do on stage, because, you know, obviously there are some limitations when you do something on stage. And it's not just practical. You know, you can't, the monster truck rally was not going to actually take place on stage. And it could in the film. But but it was also, we talked a lot about should Emma, we should see Emma's grandmother. We should see her family, not to ruin things for people, but, you know, things that financially we just couldn't expand the cast even further. It was way too many. You know, the cast was too large. We couldn't, you know, financially justify it. And so there were things that we didn't do that we thought about and that we had the opportunity to think about for the film adaptation. And Bob and Chad and Matt, I'm thrilled, were the ones that were doing it. So it was our book writer, composer, and lyricist that worked on the film adaptation. And so they started to, you know, conversations with Ryan fairly quickly and work sessions, and started to figure out how to open up the film and how to adapt it. At the end of the day, it's very much our Broadway show on stage. It's 100% of our score. And, you know, it's very true to our show, but there are understandably and wonderfully opportunities to open it up and to take it to another level.
So this leads me into what I wanted to talk about next. And I was lucky enough to see, I told you this beforehand, but I was lucky enough to see a screener this past weekend, and I absolutely loved it. So for everybody who is listening right now, it's amazing. And when it comes out on Netflix on December 11th, you must get to Netflix and watch it. But it does exactly what I at least want a movie musical to do, right? It takes what can't be done on stage, like you just said, and makes it possible for the screen. So how involved were you in it, taking these expanded visions and bringing them to life now from an artistic standpoint? How does a producer come into these conversations for the film now and bring those visions to life?
You know, we had had for 8 years, we had had many, many discussions, and I was certainly in touch, in close touch with Bob and Chad and Matt. You know, we were together constantly because of the Broadway show, and we were they were the only other ones that knew about the film for quite a while. So we were constantly talking, but this was very much Ryan's adaptation and his vision. You know, he had a very clear idea from the first moment about how he saw the adaptation going. And he was very clear to us that he also just truly adored the show and wanted to be very true to the show. And I think that's why he brought on Bob and Chad and Matt, as opposed to bringing on very established film writers. You know, that is, you know, wonderful for us because we really wanted to protect our show, because that's, of course, what we want to do. But with complete respect to Ryan and to the idea of how it could be enhanced and taken to the next level on screen. But Ryan had a very clear vision, and he also, you know, had a couple thoughts about adding a song that we all thought was a wonderful idea. And Bob and Chad and Matt wrote that song, and it ended up in the end credits. It didn't end up in the movie. You know, that was part of the conversation that happened. But I had, you know, in answer to your question specifically, it really, really was Ryan leading the way creatively, 100%. We weighed in and we had thoughts and opinions, but it's Ryan's vision.
How does your role change now once filming begins? I know you went out to LA and were there for a lot of the filming, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Pre-COVID, you know, right?
Pre-COVID,
yes. Actually, right up to COVID, because we were out in LA when we got shut down.
Yeah.
You know, and we had 4 days to go when the movie was shut down. And it was kind of miraculous that we were able to get those 4 days in July. Being in the film business separate from my Broadway life, you know, there are all sorts of different ways to be involved. I think in this case, so much of the heavy lifting as far as shaping the story and shaping the characters and shaping the music and the score, so much of that happened before we got to Los Angeles and to the set, because it really was our show. And for 8 years, Bill and I had worked so closely with the creative team to develop every moving part of the show. And it wasn't radically altered. So creatively, there wasn't, you know, a tremendous amount to do. Casting, you know, it was certainly our pay. We were obligated contractually to approve the cast. And, you know, I'm sorry, I just don't think Meryl Streep is right. I don't think that was going to happen. Yeah. So, you know, that was not a very stressful thing to do. We just continued to support in a variety of different ways. Obviously, we were sitting on the history of the whole project. And so when it came time to start thinking about how to put it out there and to understand the challenges and the opportunities that we encountered along the way and understand partnerships and a variety of different ways that we were able to support Netflix and Ryan along the way. That was really something that we were able to do. And also, as far as some of the work along the way to weigh in and to give notes, whether it was a new scene or the song that was under consideration, or it was very helpful to be right there, to be on set and to be able to interact with everybody on a day-to-day basis.
I really love how you said earlier that you were able to have some of the film cast attend in secret the Broadway production. So they were able to see, you know, their character's journey on the stage, and then kind of, I'm assuming that there were some transition and that was probably really helpful for them in their, you know, character development of their own.
What happened really, it wasn't like, okay, Meryl, you're in the show, go see the Broadway show. It was more their own choice to attend, to understand what the prom was and to make a decision whether or not they wanted to be in the film. So, you know, that it was the other way around. And, you know, I think with any actor, they want to make the part their own, and they, are certainly inspired by what they see, but they need to shape it and create it and for it to be their own version of that character. Because when the show was written, you know, it was written with the idea that one day it would be played by millions of different actors and high school kids and all sorts of things. So, you know, it's not like it was set in stone that it would be played in one way. But important to say that, you know, of course, our deep, deep allegiance and love for our Broadway cast was always front of mind. It was a Ryan's dream to make a fairly big budget motion picture that would get the broadest possible audience. And for that to happen, for that to be greenlit by Netflix, it really required a very well-known cast, very established film cast. And our Broadway actors could not be better, and they're top of their game on Broadway. But, you know, obviously they're not established film actors. So that is why Ryan went in that direction, but which was hard for us, but understandable.
Well, I love that you just brought up big budget movie, because it truly seemed like a big budget movie. And Mary and I were talking before you hopped on about Ryan and the team building New York City in like 6 months, apparently, after you guys tried to get permits. Mary, do you want to?
So the article that I read this morning had talked about how he had, you know, applied for the permit with Times Square and was unfortunately rejected. And so what, I mean, do you know what those were you part of those conversations of like what, like, was soundstage just like next? I know that you guys took on like an abandoned property, right?
It was actually downtown LA.
Yeah.
You know, it was assumed from day one. I mean, with our first conversations with Ryan is that we would definitely be shooting in New York, and we were going to be shooting at Sardi's, and we were going to be, you know, that's what he wanted. And Sardi's was, of course, on board, but we were not able to shoot on the streets of New York, as we just assumed we would be able to. You know, Ryan's team really went all out to try and make that happen. And it's like, how do you do this if you can't shoot in New York? And when Ryan then turned around and went to Netflix and said, you know, we did everything we could, we couldn't get thumbs up, what we need to build New York. And Netflix said yes.
It's scary how much it looked like. Like every detail is so spot on.
I think it's kind of New York on steroids.
Yeah.
And Sardi's on steroids, yeah. To be honest.
Were you able to visit that particular location on set?
Yeah, it's
and
beautiful.
How did that feel for you having, you know, been on that street?
It's magnificent. And, you know, I think how it made me feel is just so excited about this movie because the movie is a love letter to Broadway. And boy, you know, to your point, the attention to detail and the care and the love that went into capturing and you know, really just making it as beautiful and lush and spectacular as possible. It is magical, and you know, just having the deepest possible passion for our community and our world, knowing that this is how Broadway was going to be presented to the world. So it just made me so happy because I just felt that, you know, aside from the adaptation of our film and the extremely important message that our film has, or our show has, and getting it out there in such a big, gigantic way, but then Broadway and the you know, making Broadway just front and center in everyone's mind out in the world, just in the ripple effect that that could have on people's excitement and coming to New York and seeing live shows or seeing live theater all around the world. That's where my head went. And I just was ecstatic.
You know, for people like us who are, you know, so accustomed to seeing Broadway, it made, you know, like us really want to see a show again after watching the film.
Yeah.
It makes you really miss it.
I'm excited. Sorry, real quick, Brian. I'm excited to see it. I have not seen it yet, but I'm excited just because of what you just said and how, like, I feel just about Broadway and about theater, and especially right now how we've been shut down for so long and will continue to be shut down for a number of months, and I think it's important to that, like with a platform like Netflix, where it's so global and it's not just like it's like a theater streaming platform. It is a global platform that will reach so many people who don't have access to Broadway or who don't really even know what Broadway really is or what theater is, will have an opportunity to get that exposure, to get that taste a little bit, and especially while we're shut down, to make them really want it. So when we come back, they will actually try to come if they can.
Exactly, exactly. And they should. Everyone should.
Speaking of COVID-19, and this whole shutdown, what was the experience? Well, how did COVID-19 put any like roadblocks or challenges in the process of putting out The Prom? I know you said that you guys had to shut down a little early, 4 days, but what was that like once you did get back on set, and did that push you guys back at all in your release?
Well, I don't think it was necessarily the fact that we didn't finish in March that pushed the schedule a little bit. It was probably COVID overall and just having to rethink everything. You know, it obviously threw everything into a tizzy because we were still shooting, and we almost made it. And I think we probably would have gotten another day in or two before we were shut down, but we were shooting at a high school at the time. And obviously high schools were shut down. And so if we were at a private location or even on, you know, the Paramount lot where we did a lot of the shooting, we probably could have continued for another day or two. I was supposed to go to London, and I was so excited about going to London for the cast recording. And we had recorded all the cast, all the vocals, but with the orchestra. I was so excited. Oh,
those orchestrations are so good.
They're so good, right?
They're so full. It's really like on steroids, like you said about the street.
Exactly, exactly. So I was so excited about going, but I did not go. And so it was a pared down team, obviously, that did go in the middle of COVID, mid-March to London to record. And so they just made it in, you know, just made it in. When we did go back and capture those 4 days in July in Los Angeles, it was a very, very pared down set. It was absolutely, you know, only those that had to be there, a really tiny sub, you know, no matter what, nobody who, unless they absolutely had to be there, was there. So I was not there. It was not essential. And it was so important that the strictest COVID protocols were followed for obvious reasons. And the good news is that we had wrapped literally that day that we shut down with most of our cast. But our Emma and Alyssa, played by Ariana DeBose and Joellen Pellman, did fly out for that shoot.
Wow. Was this one of the first shows that Netflix brought back to start? Do you know? To start like filming again?
I think so. I think it was. It was very early in the reboot process. And Netflix, I was thrilled to learn, really has, more than any other studio, the strictest protocols. And so it really was... I was able to get dailies, so it was fascinating to see all the dailies, but you also were able to see all the protocol being followed in the footage. So that was really interesting, and it gave me comfort for all the people involved. Scary time.
Yeah, these new times. And it's crazy because it just depends on where you are, and at least in our country, it depends on what, like, when in 2020 you are starting a project, because things are changing by the minute. But I mean, it's I'm happy to know that you guys were able to wrap or come back at least to finish the project. When did you guys first shut down in March? Was it after Broadway shut down?
No, it was before.
It was before. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was it was the same day. It was the same.
It was the 12th.
Our last day of shooting was the 12th. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget that day ever in my whole life.
We'll have to like celebrate that day at the theater every year. like the opposite of celebrate. You know what I mean? In memoriam.
Yes.
Was there something in particular about this process and about working in this particular medium of film, you know, with a slew of new collaborators, including Ryan Murphy and this star-studded cast, that you were able to learn about the piece, the prom, that you, you know, some new discovery about the piece?
Very good question. The prom and bringing it to Broadway was very challenging. It really was a roller coaster, and you know, from in a positive way, in a way, in 2016, we did our first big lab, and it was a week after marriage equality passed, and and so, which is, you know, incredible that marriage equality passed, but we had everybody saying to us, oh, it's so nice you're making this lovely period show, because everything's fine now. You know, and obviously that wasn't the case, but the perception was the case. You know, I think that the struggle to bring a show that some perceive as controversial, which I still don't understand, it was hard in a lot of ways that making shows like Legally Blonde, it was not, you know, it was, those shows are much easier. This was really hard. And I think having gone through all of that and the challenges, you know, even thinking about the Macy's Day Parade with the prom and how Eyes Wide Open, NBC and Macy's knew we were going to get horrible pushback, putting it nicely, as well as a lot of love out there, but that there was going to be some real ugliness that would come out of our appearing on the Macy's Day Parade, just being surrounded by all that tension and controversy for so long on this project, which is why we were determined to make it. And then to all of a sudden be on a Hollywood set and surrounded by like the top stars in the world and Netflix and director's chairs and you know, craft service tables, you know.
It's kind of like on Broadway.
I know. And it's like, wow, this is going to get out there. And we've worked so hard to get this out there. And we've had so many pushbacks and so many struggles along the way. And this is going to get out there in such a big way. The power of Netflix, the power of the internet, the power of media, the power of Meryl Streep, all of that. It was astounding and thrilling and joyous. And, through those very difficult moments along the way, and I'm not just speaking about myself, I'm, Bob and Chad and Matt and Bill, Casey, had we known there was going to be this movie at the other end of this, this amazing movie, we would have powered through those challenging moments without blinking an eye. But, it was, I think it's just that all these people have come around this show and come around this issue and believe in it as we do, that they want to get the message out that this movie has, and they want to change the world. It just, clouds parted and birds started singing. It's just been wonderful in that way.
So as a filmmaker, because you said that at the beginning of this episode, but that you've been in the film industry for many, many years now, is there anything between any of the projects you worked on with film that you would like to see be reflected on the stage as far as how film handles certain things, or even as of late with like COVID, how you would like to see theater take a stance with like COVID safety when we get back?
It's a very, very different situation. I mean, when we were doing the reshoot on Prom, we were originally going to have in one particular scene 300 extras. Not going to happen in the middle of COVID. We had to figure out workarounds to do it with a far smaller number of people. And it's seamless. You wouldn't know it in the film. They did a magnificent job. I think that it's a very different beast when you're trying to figure out how to take care of a live performance on stage, backstage, in the pit, in the audience. There are limitations. You can't control everything in the same way, and you can't put the audience in a quarantine for 2 weeks. so there are limitations. But I think that the attention to detail and the seriousness with which Netflix approached COVID certainly was inspiring and made it very clear you can still do amazing things. You just have to follow this protocol and be really, really careful. So, I think that I think we all have a lot to learn from each other. Even, Broadway is, I'm on all these COVID committees, and we're also looking at the sports teams and, the NBA and how they're managing things. And so I think we can all learn from each other during this time. I think that you can also look at Korea right now, because they have had nonstop theater since March. COVID has not interfered. And in fact, they have shut down in Korea. At different points in time, they've shut down Starbucks. They've shut down religious services. They've shut down all sorts of things, but they never shut theater down. So there is a very safe way to have theater in the middle of COVID. And so I think we have a great deal to learn from, from that as well. And not just, Broadway learning from Korea, but even the film business learning from other examples. It's best practices, and whoever's got them, let's grab them and learn from each other.
Australia is back now too.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And they were open there. In the middle of July, not so long ago, they had shutdowns and were quarantining, and now they're opening theater. It's incredible.
Jealous.
It gives us hope.
I know.
Yes. Yes, for sure.
Mary, do you think we should move on to our lightning round finish this off?
Yes, I'm excited.
Okay. So our first, these are just lightning round questions that we do. We switch them up every now and then.
Uh-oh.
And we're not necessarily going to we're not necessarily going to respond. They're just like little hit and runs. So the first question, Mary, would you like to ask the first question?
Yes, please. It is my favorite question. It is, what is one thing in the theater industry that confuses you?
One thing. I have to come up with one thing?
Yes.
Oh, confuses me. Wow. I am confused as to why it's so much easier to mount shows, and I'm speaking as a producer, to mount shows that are pre-promoted and that have either been on screen or they are, you know, it's about a recording artist, then you know their music, as opposed to something brand new and original. Obviously from The Prom and other things that I've done. I mean, I love both. I love both. I've done both. But I mean, to me, I am most excited about brand new things I've never seen before. It's much easier, and this is in the film business too, it's much easier to get a green light, to raise money, to get an audience to come see something that they've basically already seen. You know, so talk about confusion, that confuses me.
That's a great answer.
I love it. What are three adjectives that describe your favorite working environment?
Three adjectives. Oh, wow. Collaborative, inventive, and challenging. You know, I like, if it's so easy, you know, everybody would do it. I like the process of figuring it out and working with a team of people. So collaborative, inventive, and I don't know that challenging is the right word.
What is one job in the theater industry that you would trade jobs with for 1 week?
Ah, well, I would definitely become a theater owner, and I would green light all the shows that I think should be greenlit, and I'd give them theaters. That's what I would do.
I love
Can
that.
I add a follow-up to that, Brian?
Very sure. Productive week.
Same question, but for the film industry.
Well, I think it would be just so much fun if I had Meryl Streep's talent. And she can do anything. It's just amazing. And she is such an incredible pro. It's just been what a gift to have watched her work. So I'd be Meryl Streep for a week.
So you're trading jobs with Meryl Streep, not
just
acting.
No, not jobs.
That's specific.
Not jobs. I would need to change. I would need to be her. That's okay. The thing. I want to know, like, what it would be like to have that talent, to have that, you know, a just extraordinary professionalism and just ability to become a different character. And that isn't entirely answering your question. Again, I'd probably want to be a studio head and I'd green light all sorts of movies that I want to make.
Is there something in your process as a producer that you would find unique to you?
I don't know that it's certainly not unique to me. You know, every producer is different, but I just love more than anything the process of collaboration and finding a team of people that that loves to collaborate and loves to, you know, and that are so good at what they do that I'm going to learn so much from them. So I think that's how I love to work.
What is one hobby you have outside of theater?
Well, outside of theater, I love the movies, but I think you as far as entertainment goes, I am a massive political junkie, and I collect political buttons, and here I can. This is audio, so it won't mean anything. You know, my Fauci button.
Oh my gosh! My
vote out hate. You know, I happen to have my political button. So I'm fascinated by politics and foreign policy, and I can't get enough of history and learning about all that, and watch. You know. Every single doc I can get my hands on the state of the world and also understanding the historic context of the world.
Who is your number one ideal collaborator in the theater or film?
I'm going to say, you know, I'm just going to throw out someone who I just think I've just had the best experience working with this person on The Prom and on Halftime. And I just love working with him. And that's Matthew Sklar, composer Matthew Sklar. He is just the most giving, supportive collaborator. He is egoless. He is just what is best for the show, for the film. He's a team player. He's so brilliant. And nothing is precious. So if he creates something and it doesn't work, he just creates something else. And the one example that I'll never forget, you know, that I saw over and over again on both of the musicals I've worked on with Matt is we would be in a room like with Casey, Bob, Chad, and Matt. This was going back years when we were developing The Prom, and we'd be talking about a particular moment. And Matt was always very, very quiet, and Chad and Bob and Casey and everybody were throwing out ideas. And, you know, maybe the scene should be this and this, and the music should kind of be like that and that. And Matt is very quiet. And then kind of at the end of the discussion, you know, Casey would turn to Matt and say, well, what do you think? And then Matt would say, well, how about something like this? And during the course of the conversation, he was composing the perfect song that took everyone's thoughts into consideration. And then he would play something on the piano right then and there. And it was like, yeah, that's it. Okay, great. What's next? You know, it was just like amazing to watch him work. And so I just love working with him.
Shout out to you, Matt.
Okay, then our last question is, what is the last great piece of theater that you saw?
The last great piece of theater was on March 9th. I flew back to New York for 24 hours to see the opening of my daughter's show, Endlings, at New York Musical Theater Workshop. And unfortunately, it closed the same week because of COVID, but it was quite a wonderful opening night, and I was so proud of her, and I'm so thrilled I was there.
Hmm. And Sammy, we were speaking about theater in Korea. Sammy was mm-hmm. out in Korea for several months.
That's right.
Reporting yeah. back on what they're doing over there.
Exactly. So yeah. I'm just happy that it did get to open. You know, so there's so many shows that didn't even get to open this season, and that's so sad.
Yeah, when we come back.
How can our listeners find you, and can you shout out your podcast and, you know, all that good stuff?
Yes, absolutely. Let's see. You can find me on Instagram, and I think I'm Dori.Berenstein, Berinstein. And Dori is Dori. And Facebook, I don't even know what my Facebook handle is. I really don't. I have a podcast called Deep Dive Broadway, and
with the cutest little fish in top hats.
I thank you. I love my little logo. And I'll give a shout out to a soap opera that we've launched called As the Curtain Rises, and it's Broadway's first audio soap opera, and it just has an incredible cast and lots of drama behind the curtain. So I would recommend you check it out and find out what's going on there.
Yeah, we'll put all the links in the description notes for you guys to go click through.
Thank you.
And everybody go see The Prom on Netflix starting December 11th.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And start see you streaming at the that prom. Music.
I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Well, it's been so great talking with both of you.
Yeah, thank you.
I love your podcast, so this is an honor.
Oh, we're so happy
Thanks,
to have Story. You.
We're happy to see you. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of Page to Stage. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Page to Stage Podcast.
And if you're enjoying these conversations, we would really appreciate it if you could take a couple minutes to rate and review us wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.
That's Brian.
That's Mary.
We'll see you later.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.